substance misuse.
Blog Talk Radio.
And try to get well and to live and be happy in recovery. I am so pleased to be here today to talk about a topic that is extremely timely and is in the news almost on a regular basis. So, let's start by telling you exactly what this is and why it is so poignant for us to be here today to talk about it. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, over 100,000 people in the United States die of drug overdoses and drug poisonings. A staggering 87% of those deaths involve synthetic opioids like fentanyl. Fentanyl is the word on everybody's lips when it comes to recent drug overdose and drug deaths. That's why this program is so important today. This is a crisis. Fentanyl, how do we fight it? So in order to have some answers here, I brought in an expert, Dr. Ming Wang from Karen Treatment Centers. I'd like to first say that Dr. Wang is an associate medical director at Karen Treatment Centers. He oversees the detox and chronic pain programs and Karen's nursing staff. He also serves as medical director for the Grandview and Older Adult Programs. He is a faculty member of the Karen Reading, Pennsylvania Hospital Addiction Medicine Fellowship. He also teaches the local and regional residents and medical students that rotate at Karen Treatment Centers. Dr. Wang started with Karen as an addiction medicine fellow in 2013 and then was hired as an addiction medicine physician in March of 2014. And finally, and certainly not least, he is a diplomat of the American Board of Addiction Medicine, the American Board of Anesthesiology, and the American Board of Preventive Medicine, addiction medicine specialty. He is a fellow of the American Society of Addiction Medicine and the Pennsylvania Society of Addiction Medicine as well. Dr. Wang is a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at Penn State College of Medicine. Recovery Recharge and the Pushy Broad from the Bronx is delighted to welcome Dr. Ming Wang. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so happy to be here to talk about this really a very profound topic today.
It absolutely is. So I want everybody to listen carefully because we're going to talk about the basics. We're also going to talk about what to look for, what this is all about, and what new and hopefully hopeful treatment is down the road and coming in terms of this powerful drug. So, Doc, let's start from the beginning. To those of us that don't know, including myself, because I'm learning as we go here, what is fentanyl?
Fentanyl officially, as designated by the DEA, it's a Schedule II opioid. And what it is a synthetic opioid. That means it's created synthetically in a laboratory rather than derived from natural sources such as opium. This fentanyl was created in 1959 by a man named Paul Janssen. And it has seen many, many uses, mostly in a hospital setting and in the operating room setting. But as many people are aware, more in the past many years, we have seen fentanyl also derived in laboratories show up on our streets being abused and causing death.
I see. So it is a Schedule II narcotic under the United States Controlled Substances Act of 1970. And it's also, I mean, do people say, I mean, is it true that it's more potent than the other opioids and 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine? Would you say that was the case?
That is correct. And how the DEA scheduled their controlled substances is that Schedule II will be the most addictive. And that's where fentanyl sits. And fentanyl is 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. However, Alan, let me tell you this. There are many derivatives of morphine. They're called fentanyl analogs, and such as remifentanyl, alfentanyl, sufentanyl, and carfentanyl that showed up a number of years ago that people described as an elephant tranquilizer, right? A little bit will kill you. And all these fentanyl analogs have even greater potency than fentanyl itself. Sometimes they're 1,000 or 10,000 times more potent than morphine.
That's almost, those figures are almost staggering, Doctor, absolutely staggering. There are two types of fentanyl as we know them. One is pharmaceutical and the other is illicitly manufactured. Can you address both of those?
Yes, and they are very different, Ellen. The legitimate hospital quality fentanyl produced by pharmaceutical companies in this country, they have certain properties. Okay, that's very, very predictable. And many of us physicians are very familiar with this particular fentanyl. However, the illicit fentanyl produced on the streets, what the manufacturer, all they need to do is modify a certain side chain of the primary molecule, then it becomes a completely different chemical. Still called a fentanyl, but the properties are dramatically different, such as the half-life. The half-life of what we're seeing on the streets today are much more prolonged than the hospital quality fentanyl. And that makes a huge difference in addiction and how to treat and manage withdrawal from the street fentanyl.
So what you're saying is that the illicitly manufactured fentanyl lasts a longer time. Is that what you're saying to us?
That's our experience, and not just our experience at Care and Treatment Center, but across the country, many addiction physicians are appreciating this particular characteristic. And on top of that, not only the prolonged half-life that makes withdrawal management rather challenging, but also the adulterant that's put into the street fentanyl these days, such as xylazine, that causes additional complications that's very challenging in a detox setting.
So other drugs are also added to fentanyl to what? It increase the potency, and then maybe it's also a way of making the drugs cheaper, more powerful, and more addictive and more dangerous at the same time?
Yes, all those are correct. And one of the strategies of illicit manufacturing of drugs is to add adulterant so that the manufacturer doesn't have to spend as much money, and the bottom line is greater, right? And but also to enhance the effect of the fentanyl. For example, xylazine showed up a few years ago as an enhancement product to fentanyl. That's causing a lot of problems.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so let's go back to some things, because let's talk about the pharmaceutical fentanyl. Why do people who are prescribed fentanyl take fentanyl? What's the reason for it?
The legitimate reason for taking a pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl is only a few things. As an adjunct to general anesthesia in the operating room, for post-op acute pain management, and for some people, they are prescribed fentanyl products, such as fentanyl patches, and also buccal fentanyl for chronic pain management, and also for people who might have cancer-related pain. They may be put on fentanyl products for pain management. Those are few of the legitimate reasons that fentanyl should be prescribed.
I see. Well, I had personal experience with fentanyl, and it was only right after hip replacement surgery, right after I was coming out of anesthesia, and the pain started to kick in for a very short period of time, only once. It was prescribed to me to help me through the pain, and that was it. And that was in a hospital setting, and it stayed in the hospital and didn't leave with me. Is it common for somebody to be prescribed fentanyl pills to go home with for pain? Is that a possibility?
Typically not from a hospital. Like you said, Ellen, the fentanyl is typically used for immediate post-op pain management. And after the person stabilizes and ready to go home, usually they're converted to another oral opioid, such as oxycodone, Percocet, hydrocodone, things of that nature, for a short duration.
For a very short duration, of course. Yes. Okay. And I have seen fentanyl patches with people for advanced stage cancer. I've seen that as well.
That's right. That's right.
And again, in a controlled environment. So let's talk about why this is so dangerous. What is the effect of fentanyl on the body, you know, compared to other opioids?
For all opioids, whether it's fentanyl or Percocet or hydrocodone, all opioids, and we're talking about a class of opioids that we call full agonist opioids, okay? These are true opioids. They act on a certain receptors in our brain called the mu receptor, and these receptors modulate certain human function, such as breathing, right, such as sedation, and opioids act on these receptors and activate these subunits. And so depending on the potency of the opioids that's being used, whether it's hydrocodone, morphine, oxycodone, or fentanyl, the effect on these receptors will be based on their potency. And the reason why fentanyl is especially dangerous because it's so potent in activating these mu receptors, therefore the initial trigger that might lead to overdose and death will be respiratory depression, okay? And with use of fentanyl, individuals are more likely to experience respiratory depression. They stop breathing, which leads to death. They never wake up from it.
So when somebody is taking it illicitly to relieve pain, what other pleasant feelings does fentanyl have, which is why people are attracted to it? What happens? What makes it so attractive?
The attractiveness of something like fentanyl comes long before that respiratory depression and death. Okay. Initially, the person feels the euphoria. The euphoria, which may consist of that sense of well-being, that relaxation, that somewhat of a sedated effect. And it also, because it does act on our brain, it also acts to sort of disconnect our feelings from those unpleasant experiences that we might want to shut ourselves off from. Right, the traumatic feelings, the depression, the anxiety. Fentanyl is one of those products that would do that. And also it's mood lifting. Opioids, not only are they sedating, that causes respiratory depression, but for many individuals, taking these sedating medication is actually mood lifting. So it's kind of like taking an antidepressant that works very quickly.
I see. And it's very similar to heroin and oxycodone in that it gives you that sense of, like you said, euphoria, pain relief, a sense of I can escape into this, right? But then the negative stuff comes along, like the confusion and the drowsiness and the dizziness. I've heard many people that suffer nausea and vomiting pupillary constriction and as you said, respiratory depression. So it's a little bit of good and a whole lot of bad, right?
That's right. Taking any opioids potentially comes with side effects. You know, like you mentioned, Ellen, nausea, constipation, things like that. However, because how opioids act on our central brain, an area of our brain called the mesolimbic system, which is generates these euphoric feelings, this encodes the information of how good it feels, right? That part of our brain supersedes the part of our brain that remembers how we get nauseated from opioids or how dysphoric we might feel after a while. So the euphoric feeling certainly dominates in that mesolimbic area.
So that would be the addiction centers of our brains.
Correct. That's where I'm going with this. That's where addiction sits, and that's what the encoding of the rewards and pleasures sits.
So let's talk just a little bit about how bad this opioid epidemic and death from fentanyl actually are, all right? Let me just give us some stats because they're staggering. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, 107,375 people in the United States died of drug overdoses and drug poisonings in the 12-month period ending in January of 2022. Over 100,000 deaths, okay? It's unbelievable. A staggering 67% of those deaths involved synthetic opioids like fentanyl. Some of these deaths were attributed to fentanyl mixed with other drugs like cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin, and many users were unaware that they were actually taking fentanyl. Can we talk about that a little bit? How does that happen on the street? What happens?
The fentanyl, because it is a synthetic opioid produced in laboratory by mixing a bunch of chemicals together, is fairly cheap to manufacture versus opiates, which are plant-derived from opium. That is more expensive to manufacture because you gotta cultivate the plant, you gotta process it, and so it's very costly. With any synthetic drugs that's produced in laboratories, it's fairly cheap to manufacture, and so because of that, the illicit manufacturers of other products, let's say cocaine. Cocaine is very expensive to cultivate, produce, and distribute, and because it comes from the coca plant, and therefore what illicit manufacturers do, they'll mix fentanyl into cocaine because fentanyl is so much cheaper to make, and therefore they save money and then, again, raises the bottom line. So those individuals whose primary drug of choice might be cocaine, they obtain cocaine not being aware that there's fentanyl mixed into it. Therefore, they use their cocaine as usual and then overdose on cocaine. Overdose on the fentanyl that's in the cocaine.
I see. That's really interesting. Okay, so I don't know what fentanyl looks like. I have no idea whether or not it would recognize it. How do you know if the substance is fentanyl, and what does it look like? How would a parent know if a child has access to it? Just tell us a little bit about that.
It would be, in the general community, it would be very difficult to recognize whether a liquid substance or a powdery substance or a pill is fentanyl or not. And the illicit manufacturers will press the fentanyl into pills that might look like a Percocet, okay, or mix it in cocaine that looks just like cocaine the person always had purchased. And so it's very difficult. However, the response from use of that drug could be the very initial indication that this is not what they think it is. This might be fentanyl. And the immediate reaction that the users get, immediate sedation, immediate respiratory depression, difficult to arouse once they kind of nod off. Those are all should be immediate indication that, yes, this is fentanyl. Let's treat it as fentanyl because that is front and center issue.
Okay. So are there such a thing as fentanyl test strips? What is that?
There are products like that out in the community, but in a practical sense, families and friends may not be able to procure those now. In a facility such as ours at Care and Treatment Center, we can test for fentanyl, and so can hospital settings, acute settings. But in the general community, that may be very difficult to do.
I see. It's too bad that we can't find some kind of testing so that people can regulate it at home, or at least if there is a danger or they're unsure, test for it before they're ingesting, obviously. Go ahead, doctor.
And for the general community and families and loved ones who has a loved one who's using illicit opioids, the best strategy to hopefully prevent an overdose in the house might be just to have nasal Narcan available and know how to use it, because Narcan now could be obtained free at any pharmacy. Just go up and ask the pharmacist for Narcan, and they will give it to you.
As many times as you ask?
That's correct.
That's fantastic.
I tested that, Ellen. I went to a local pharmacy I use personally, and I asked the pharmacist, and yes, you could have one, you could have two. Some are more generous than others.
That's great. So even you were able to obtain a doctor, no problem. So this is the scary thing, and you know I am a recovery coach, and I work with clients that are constantly worried, actually, that the drugs that they are taking may be laced with fentanyl. And by the way, this is a wonderful discussion with Dr. Wang of Care and Treatment Centers. We're talking about fentanyl and everything that has to do with how to fight it and how to recognize it. If you have questions about that today and you'd like to call in and ask Dr. Wang something directly, you can do that today on our program at 800-930-2819. That's 800-930-2819, and the doctor will answer your questions directly. So if you are using and you have questions, okay, no judgment here, or you're a parent and you're concerned about your child, please call in and our producers will take your questions and we'll direct them to Dr. Wang. Okay? So that's why it's so dangerous, everybody. What the doctor is saying is that fentanyl has been mixed in with the drugs that you're currently taking, like Percocet or OxyContin or oxycodone. So realize that what you are getting on the street is more dangerous than ever. Correct, Doc?
That is correct. It's unpredictable at best.
Unpredictable at best. Okay. All right. So let's just talk about one more topic before we go to break. So if we can't smell it or taste it or know exactly what it is there something, I mean, does fentanyl typically look like something? I mean, is it powder? Is it liquid? Is it both? What is it?
It could be produced in many forms. The traditional pharmaceutical grade of fentanyl used in hospitals and operating rooms is typically a clear liquid, and because we inject it into patients. The illicitly produced fentanyl could be liquid, it could be powder, and typically it's in the powder form. It's in a powder form or it's pressed into a pill. That's probably the most common way of seeing street fentanyl.
And how long does it live in our bloodstream?
Fentanyl has a variable half-life, and again, we're talking about pharmaceutical grade versus illicitly manufactured fentanyl. And so, for example, for pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl that we inject intravenously, usually the elimination half-life is about 1 hour, okay, about 1 hour. And the effect is very short. With the illicitly produced fentanyl, the chemical structure is not exactly the same as hospital-grade fentanyl. Depending on route of administration, whether it's nasal, whether it's oral, or it's intravenous, the onset could be very quick. However, the half-life could be very prolonged, sometimes up to 16 hours.
Well, that's very scary. unbelievable. So whether it's pharmaceutical or illicit, it's certainly going to show up in the blood work, right? And it's going to show up in the urine test, and it's also going to show up in the hair follicles as well, right? You're going to be able to detect it?
That's correct. Yeah, have to detect fentanyl in a drug screen, whether it's urine, whether it's blood or hair toxicology, that has to be indicated, because the typical 17 panel toxicology or Department of Transportation toxicology typically does not test for fentanyl. That has to be specially indicated on any panel. And that's what we do here at Curon. Now, in the last several years, we have routinely added fentanyl to our screen.
Because now it's happening so frequently, and I guess the patients that come in are so frequent that you have to add it to the panels as well. Do you know if it's added to the panels of home drug tests as well at this point?
But there are home test kits available, and I just recently read about that. I'm not sure, Ellen, if it's readily available across the country. And so any family members and friends who wants to test their loved ones for fentanyl, there are products out there right now that are strips. Otherwise, could approach the family physician, the primary care provider, to ask for testing.
Thank you very much. And we're going to stop right there, and we're going to come back and talk specifically about fentanyl addiction and more about how this drug is invading all of us and how we treat it. So come back to us in a few seconds. We'll be right back.
From the pushing it broad from the Bronx to New York,
do you have long-term depression or anxiety? With the right tools, you can fully recover from the long-term effects of childhood trauma. Kimberly Beekman at Inner Alignment offers Level 1 Inner Healing, Coach Certification, and Soul Retrieval Healer Certification. With this revolutionary neuroscience approach, you can experience profound shifts in only 2 months. To learn more about these offers and programs, visit KimberlyBeekman.com.
Hi everyone, Dr. Pat here, host of the Dr. Pat Show. For about 20 years, you've heard me talk about silver and the importance of silver. I've been looking upside down and sideways to find silver that was the highest quality, and I think I found it. No, actually, I know I found it. I discovered this in my own healing journey, and that's what we use for me. Amio Life has the most advanced silver available today. All things that harm our health is what it takes care of. Now, I thought I'd seen it all because I've been on this journey for 20 years with silver, but I've not quite found anything like Amio Life. The folks and our friends at Amio Life have put together a special discount for your first purchase of 20% off. AmioLife.com. AmioLife.com. Remember to give them a call. Tell them Dr. Pat sent you at 1-800-422-8148. I've already sent it to my naturopath.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today, or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
From the pushy broad from the Bronx to New York,
Welcome back, Transformation Talk Network listeners. I'm Ellen Stewart. I'm the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. This is my show, Recovery Recharged. I am here with Dr. Ming Wang from Curon Treatment Centers. which is a number one addiction treatment provider in the United States. That's CARON, Caron Treatment Centers. And we are talking about fentanyl and the fentanyl crisis and how we fight it. If you have a question that you would like to ask the doctor, please call in today to the show. That's live, 800-930-2819, 800-930-2819, and the doctor will answer your question live. So, Doc, you work for Caron Treatment Centers, which is a residential addiction treatment center provider, and you see a lot of fentanyl cases. Let's talk about fentanyl as something that is extremely addictive. Tell us about the patients that you see.
So, especially the fentanyl users, we have been seeing more and more individuals come to our facility here in Pennsylvania over the last several years. Okay, so it's point of interest, Alan, is that most likely the reason within the last several years we've seen this escalation in the illicit fentanyl use is that if you remember around 2017. The U.S. Government started to crack down on prescribing of opioids. And many physicians after that began to just kind of dial back on prescribing opioids, the legitimate opioids such as oxycodone, hydrocodone, and such. And with that, the illicit manufacturers found an opportunity to ramp up their illicit opioid production. And here we have fentanyl, very cheap to produce, mix a bunch of chemicals together, and probably the most difficult part, my guess, is how to ship them into the U.S. And so that's when we started to see this uptick in fentanyl cases. And that presents a challenge to those individuals who seek help with their fentanyl use and come to a facility like ours. The withdrawal management would be very challenging.
So what happened was, I mean, all of those documentaries and all of the news items on the OxyContin and the Percocets and all of that influx. So when the government cracked down on that, illicit manufacturers had to find a way to produce something else and produce it more cheaply, right? And then raise the price of everything out on the street because it became more difficult to get. I get it. So this is what you're seeing on a regular basis. How often does it come into Caron Treatment Centers? How often are you treating this? Is it with the regular pattern of people that come in?
Yeah, we are seeing fentanyl users come into our facility on a daily basis. And any given day, a group of patients come into our facility, and at least one, if not more, are using opioids with fentanyl mixed into it. And so our withdrawal management strategy over the past several years have to be modified, being mindful of the characteristic of the illicitly produced fentanyl.
And I think that maybe it's important to tell our listeners that these fentanyl users that come to you come at all different ages, from all different walks of life, and from different economic levels. Discuss that a little bit.
Fentanyl, illicit fentanyl use is not unique to just any one population. Young people, as young as teenagers, if they have the financial resources and able to purchase illicit opioids off the streets, they'll use that. Young adults and adults, but we're mostly seeing adults using illicit fentanyl because they have the resources to purchase these products. Also, our older adult population here on campus, I have not seen that population use illicit opioids as much. Very rare in that population.
Okay. I see. So not the older adult population, which is what, 55 and over, something like, is that your age cutoff for older adults?
Yeah, it's 65 years and over.
Oh, it's 65 years. Okay, 65 years. But below that and middle adult range, people with means that can produce, that can purchase opioids. So would you find that most of the time they don't realize that they're taking fentanyl, which is what the problem is?
Our experience here at Karen is that people who come in using fentanyl, they know they're using fentanyl.
They know.
Oh, they're using fentanyl. And once in a while, we do see individuals that come in and that come up positive for fentanyl on their drug screen and was not aware they were using fentanyl. But now we are seeing people who knowingly use fentanyl because of the potency of that drug, which is what they're seeking, the euphoria, and which is what they want.
I see. So before they come to you and they're experiencing emergency situations, can you tell us what the signs are so that if people around them and parents are trying to help a loved one or a family member trying to help the loved one, what are the signs of a fentanyl overdose?
Probably the most obvious sign, Ellen, in the home situation or work situation is that if families and friends and coworkers notice that the individuals is falling asleep a lot, just nodding off, right? And sometimes difficult to arouse, that should immediately raise suspicion that this person is on opioids and possibly fentanyl. And so sleeping, falling asleep a lot, that would be the primary indication.
And that is really a number one absolutely evident thing that people can see, right? I mean, you can't miss that. So that's really something to look out for. And also some other things, small constricted pinpoint pupils, like you said, unresponsive and falling asleep or losing consciousness, slow or weak or, of course, not breathing, choking or gurgling sounds, a limp body, cold or clammy skin, or discolored skin is also, according to the CDC, signs of an overdose. So what should they do if they see someone poisoned from fentanyl? What should they do?
Any family members or friends who come across an individual displaying these symptoms should immediately call 911 and initiate CPR. If they have Narcan, definitely use it while waiting for the ambulance to arrive.
Right. So we don't have to have somebody lose consciousness or stop breathing before they lose Narcan, correct?
No. If they're starting to be become very sedated and somewhat difficult to arouse but still breathing, I would suggest that they use Narcan immediately before it progresses any further, which would be more difficult to resuscitate once they get further down the road.
I understand. All right. So now let's spend the rest of the time talking about how Karen Treatment Centers and yourself and your clinicians treat fentanyl addiction. So you said you see patients very often. Tell us a little bit about your personal experience working with fentanyl abuse and how to treat it.
The eventual goal of taking care of a fentanyl, illicit fentanyl user, is to manage the initial opioid withdrawal that is going to come, and it is very fairly intense because fentanyl is a very potent opioid, and perhaps to convert them to another opioid. And earlier on, the first half of the show, I mentioned that fentanyl is what's considered a full agonist opioid, okay? And the treatment strategy, the management strategy for opioid withdrawal from fentanyl is using another opioid called buprenorphine. And buprenorphine is a partial agonist that does not seem to come with as many side effects as full agonist opioid. So that's the tricky part, Ellen, to convert them onto buprenorphine. Given the long half-life of fentanyl, we cannot manage illicit fentanyl like we do with a pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl. We have to wait. We have to wait a sufficient amount of time before we give the buprenorphine, because what happens is that if we were to give buprenorphine too early while there's ample amount of illicit fentanyl within their body, we will send them into a full-blown withdrawal.
That is, and that's the key, isn't it? That is absolutely the key. So on average, so what do? You test and then you wait and you see. How do you regulate that? How do you know?
The guideline for initiating buprenorphine for someone who's using a long-acting opioid, and nowadays we consider fentanyl, street fentanyl, a long-acting opioid, is to wait until the symptoms are moderate to severe. And sometimes we use timing. Typically, our experience here, Karen, is that for street fentanyl, typically we wait upwards of 3 days after their last use to be considered ready to initiate buprenorphine. But there's also another strategy that more and more clinicians in this country are using, is we're using a strategy of micro-dosing of buprenorphine. To initiate buprenorphine a little bit earlier, because some people have very low tolerance for discomfort.
I see. So instead of waiting too long or doing things too quickly, microdosing is now the answer. Has that been somewhat effective?
Yeah, microdosing has, we found that is fairly effective, and we could actually initiate someone's withdrawal management with buprenorphine earlier than if we wait until they're in severe withdrawal. But this is the advantage of being in a treatment facility like ours for withdrawal management, in that waiting period, which can be very, very uncomfortable for some people. We do have what we call collectively comfort medications to kind of take the edge off of the withdrawal symptoms while they're waiting for appropriate timing for the buprenorphine.
It's very important what you just said, because many of the active addicts that I work with, when I recommend treatment centers, and of course Karen is on the top of my list, they always say the same thing to me. They say, I am worried about the painful detox. So can you address that to make sure to get the word out there to people that are thinking of coming in, how Karen manages their pain during the detox to make them more comfortable?
Yeah, so the opioid withdrawal symptoms, not just fentanyl, but across the board, all opioids, the withdrawal symptoms are fairly consistent. They include perhaps generalized body aches, joint aches, tactile disturbances, you know, the good old-fashioned pins and needles feelings on the skin that feels like a sunburn. There's anxiety. There's sleeplessness. Can't fall asleep, can't stay asleep. And there's there's a good old restless legs at night that can't seem to go away, that keeps people up. And just the general dysphoric feeling, just that awful, yucky feeling that people experience. And so some people actually have a very high tolerance for that, and some people don't, Ellen, and some people just can't tolerate even just mild, uncomfortable symptoms. So the comfort medication I speak of, and you know, one of them is the good old-fashioned phenobarbital. In the old days, that's pretty much all is used, phenobarbital, buckets of it. And before buprenorphine became more popular, and there's also, you know, the usual NSAIDs, Tylenol, there's nausea medicine, there's cramping medicines, and there's a medicine that's used extensively in treatment facilities called clonidine, okay? It's a blood pressure medicine, but it acts on a little area in our brain called the amygdala or the locus coeruleus, and it targets that little tiny area where many of these symptoms are generated and becomes hyperactive. And so our patients typically do fairly well. Not to say that they have zero withdrawal symptoms on comfort medications, but it certainly takes the edge off that they can wait it out, so to speak.
And on average, how long does that detox period take?
My experience here, Ellen, is that when we use comfort medications on individuals going through opioid withdrawal, some of them actually feel so well that they just they could wait. They wait it out, and sometimes until essentially without need for buprenorphine. And some people are able to use the comfort medications for 1 to 2 days until the symptoms become so severe that they're ready to use the buprenorphine.
Okay. So
a discomfort threshold.
Right. Yeah, I hear it.
And I want to remind the audience also that for otherwise healthy individual, those without heart disease, lung disease, and such, opioid withdrawal is not fatal. It can be very uncomfortable, okay, compared to other substances like alcohol or benzodiazepines.
And that's very, very, very important, okay? Would you repeat what you just said, doctor?
For otherwise healthy individual without such things as heart disease, lung disease, opioid withdrawal is not fatal. It can be very uncomfortable.
Okay, so as bad as it is, you're going to help them manage the pain, but it's not fatal, and that's really important. So all of you out there that are thinking about doing this, what is the urgency of doing it under medical supervision, doctor? Address that, because people think they can do it on their own. What's the dangers of that, even healthy individuals?
And some people are successful in stopping for a period of time. Okay, when they go through, you know, cold turkey, right? They just tough it out at home. The problem is this: you and I both agree that addiction is a brain disease, and there's that area of the midbrain, the mesolimbic system that I mentioned earlier. So the memory of prior rewards and pleasures will always be encoded in that area. It's never going away. Okay, so even if an individual is successful in cold turkeying at home, at some point in the future, that area of the brain will be triggered and become activated if they're not in recovery, in solid recovery, and it will prompt them to want to go back to using fentanyl. You know, the cravings and the urges and the obsession of the mind will lead them back to using again. So the advantage of proper withdrawal management, detox, and treatment is that the brain part will be addressed. This is about body, mind, and spirit. It's not just about the body.
Exactly right. Those are always my words, all right? It's not only the detox portion. It's the treatment that you get to sustain your recovery and to understand that you are always susceptible to relapse unless you have the foundation of good treatment and recovery behind you, which is a wonderful thing. So people have heard of naloxone, Doc. Is that also buprenorphine? Is that another name for it?
Naloxone is Narcan, the reversal drug.
Ah, okay. So naloxone is certainly, when you say it's a reversal drug, tell us exactly what that means. I know it can save lives, but it does reverse the poisoning situation, and it's something that everybody should have at home, correct?
That's correct. Naloxone has been around for a long time. It is another drug that acts on the mu receptor, the same receptor that opioids attaches themselves to. So what Narcan or naloxone does is that attaches to the mu receptors and reverses the negative effects of opioids, such as respiratory depression especially. And that's typically when Narcan is used in the situation of respiratory depression and unresponsiveness because of the opioid's effect on the mu receptors. So it reverses the negative effect of the opioids.
Okay. All right. So let's continue to talk about some of the warning signs and the conversation specifically that we should be having with our children and with our loved ones. I wanted to alert parents to what their children are talking about using these particular terms in conversation. And there's a list of them, and I'm going to go through them really quickly. But this can be code, so to speak, for fentanyl. That would be beans, green apples, apples, shady 80s, 80s, fake Oxy, Apache, Goodfellow, Great Bear, He-Man, Jackpot, King Ivory, Murder 8, Tango and Cash, China Girl, Chinatown, Dance Fever, and Greenies. I'm sure there were a million others. But if you've heard any of those things or you see your kids texting any of those things, please be concerned about it. What do parents sometimes tell you, Doc? Some examples of what you're seeing about what loved ones are feeling and the questions they're asking.
Some of the questions I've heard over the years, Ellen, from families and loved ones is that many family members, frankly, were just not aware of their loved one's drug use, and some are aware of it, okay? However, to encourage their loved one to seek help, that's another story. And dependent individuals could sometimes be very, very resistant to treatment. And not all, but some people do seek help on their own without encouragement or mandates. And so my suggestion to those family members out there and friends, if you suspect that your loved one's using any illicit substance, and it doesn't have to be just about fentanyl, but if you suspect your loved one's using any type of illicit mood-altering substances, then a conversation might be warranted. And if that doesn't help things move forward, then perhaps the conversation with your loved one's medical provider or your own medical providers who might have resources that they could share with you. And certainly we get phone calls from family members and reference primary care providers, healthcare providers, who reach out to us directly wanting asking questions about how they might be able to refer their patients or their loved ones or their friends to treatment for help.
Well, Karen,
knowing where to go for help, right?
Knowing where to go to help. Resources like myself, a recovery coach, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, calling 800-889-1757. I will give you a half hour to talk to me, complimentary. Go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com. 800-889-1757. I will direct services to you. Of course, Karen Treatment Center is in Warnersville, Pennsylvania. Doc, it's been wonderful having you here. I just want to spend the last 30 seconds just give a message out there to people who are thinking about this and what they should be doing, and let's go out on a hopeful note. So what can you give us in terms of hope today?
There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of hope, and everyone deserves to have a better life and a functional, productive life in recovery. And it's just a matter of reaching back out to the hand that reached out to you. And the help is out there, not just Care and Treatment Center, but across the country. There are many, many facilities who are able to provide that foundation of recovery for sustainable abstinence.
Sustainable abstinence, and that's what we all pray for on a daily basis. I am so thrilled to have you, Dr. Wang. We know we're going to have you back because you promised that to me before we started this program, so I'm going to hold you to it. Karen Treatment Center's Warnersville, Pennsylvania, the fentanyl crisis, very helpful warriors in terms of people like Dr. Wang and Karen Treatment Center. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. See you next time. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening, and remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the push.